Welcome back to Logical with Ludmila, where we untangle the legal knots so that you don't have to. I'm Ludmila Yamalova, a U.S. qualified lawyer based in Dubai. In each episode, we break down complex law into clear, practical insights that you can actually use. In this episode, we'll discuss confidentiality agreements in the UAE, in particular in the context of employment relationships. As we all know, the confidentiality sort of standard in employment contracts, and in most cases, they're drafted quite broadly, and they're written fairly forcefully. And when the employment ends, and it ends badly in particular, they're often invoked fairly aggressively. But here's the legal reality. Alleging disclosure of confidential information is not enough. In the UAE, claims of breach of confidentiality are treated as contractual liability, and contractual liability requires proof. So what I want to do today is I want to discuss about confidentiality in the context of employment, a relationship in the UAE, on the basis of a specific case study. And this particular case study is a new court case from the highest court in Dubai, the Dubai Court of Cassation, dated just a few months ago, so in 2025. I thought that talking about a specific case and a specific case study will really help contextualize these principles, which we hear so often and that are so often kind of swung around by employers and other kinds of parties in general and sort of hiding behind this veil of confidentiality. And for obvious reasons, particularly in the context of employment, because you've got the employer and the party with all the sort of the muscle, and you've got the employee, the weaker party, that in many of these cases, the employee feel threatened or feel cornered and therefore kind of feel forced to sign a lot of these confidentiality agreements kind of at the outset of the relationship or at the exit from the employment relationship. And worry about kind of their overall implication and more importantly, ultimate application or enforcement of the employment agreements, because they're so widely used and they are so, as I mentioned earlier, they're so in many ways wordy. They are so detailed with these sort of long sentences, paragraphs, and legalese, and so therefore, by very nature, how they are described and how they're defined, they seem a little threatening, a little intimidating, especially for employees. And that'll tell you kind of from a personal standpoint and a personal/professional standpoint. I mean, we've seen in my practice, I've seen so many of these employment agreements with these confidentiality clauses. And what surprises me, and I guess that's to say it mildly, what perhaps shocks me still to this day, how many very well-to-do, upstanding citizens or companies, global companies, still include these confidentiality agreements so in such broad terms or include, and they make them so all-encompassing from a legal standpoint, from sort of practical standpoint, it's, and perhaps maybe because I've been practicing for so long, it's just to me, it's more obvious than to others, but they seem so unenforceable. So many of the provisions in these many, many pages and paragraphs of verbiage are actually not enforceable. I remember still, and I often use this example with my team, back in the old days when I still practiced in Silicon Valley, I practiced as an in-house counsel for a fiber optics company. I remember we had, and that's your technology, and we had a lot of IP, a lot of patents. So there's a lot of, obviously, confidentiality agreements that were exchanged with employees and amongst the different parties. And so as a result, there were a lot of disputes that related to confidentiality. And back then, I remember there was one of these disputes kind of early on in my practice, one of these disputes about confidentiality ended up in court. And long story short, what I remember, this is from 20 years ago now, that the courts back then said, listen, just because something is labeled as confidential doesn't mean it's confidential. In order for it to actually avail itself or of protection of the courts and confidentiality designation, the information in there actually has to be confidential. It's just, it's not the case that anything that's sort of disclosed between the parties is by very nature confidential. So in other words, the data has to be confidential, sort of the data point has to be confidential. One, and then two, it's also that then it's the burden is on the employer or the kind of the drafting party to or the party that wants to protect its confidentiality to clearly designate what is confidential, what is not. So it's not just that, okay, any kind of communication between us is confidential, but it actually has to be truly confidential. And furthermore, if there's something that's specifically important or valuable to the company in particular who's trying to or the employee in that case, for example, that protect something, that it's the obligation, the burden is on them to make sure they designate that specific document as confidential. And so that was, you know, that kind of, that's what I just, the example I gave you, is 20 years old, but, you know, I kind of have carried it through my practice, and I still to this day scratch my head sometimes, and I look at these global tech companies in particular, and I look at their confidentiality provisions in these employment agreements, or separate confidentiality agreements that are attached to the employment relationship, and I wonder, why, because so much of what's in these agreements is actually not enforceable, and it's unnecessary. So now let's kind of break it down, what I mean by unnecessary. I mean, as we know, especially today, fast forward 20 years, right, and our day-to-day life, I mean, we basically stopped communicating in sort of physical form in the way, in terms of writing notes, right, physical sort of handwritten notes. Everything we do is digital. Everything the way we communicate with one another, it's being through emails, WhatsApps, you know, SMSs, but maybe less so. So it's all digital. So, and there's a lot of communication. So anything we do, we no longer go to libraries, right? It's everything we do is sort of digital form. So it cannot be that every exchange between, you know, two parties can be designated as confidential. It's just, it's not feasible. It's not possible. And so therefore, if you end up in court and you, as in this case, an employer, you're trying to protect and argue that everything that you gave to your employee must be designated as confidential, it's basically in physical form, it's unrealistic. It's not possible to show all that information that was exchanged in a digital format, that it must be treated confidential. So there has to be some principles of logic and reasonableness that apply. And I still see that this day and age, a lot of the time with companies, big companies, international companies, international, especially big tech in particular, that I guess, you know, somehow these the old practices, I guess old practice, old habits die hard, the old practices that remain. So much of what's in these confidentiality agreements are actually not effective. Now, or like if they were to ever be in sort of argued in court, they would not be enforced. That being said, they are being asserted against employees over and over and over again. And as a result, because, you know, because again, you've got this sort of a David and Goliath, you know, the big company here, the behemoth of like the sort of the global tech in particular, and the employee, you know, the weaker party, and the employees just assumes that everything is in the confidentiality agreement is valid, because why else would they be asked to sign this document by the company, and a company who should know better. And as a result, what often happens as well, especially at the end of employment, companies often present employees with even more documents as part of their termination. So you sign more documents, sign here that basically more confidentiality obligations. So it's a subject for, you know, for a different day, but generally speaking, you should not be signing on to any new obligations or any new documents upon exiting your employment, because whatever it is that you would otherwise have to be subject during your employment should have been signed at the beginning of the employment, and you would have been subject to it throughout the employment. At the time you exit, you should not be signing on to any new obligations unless there's compensation that's proportionate to that new obligation. So for example, let's say the employer decided that there is something that you've learned recently that's very valuable to them, and they that you, they want a specific document for you to sign that that specific information is has additional level of confidentiality, well, you are not required to sign it. And so if it is really valuable for the company, they should offer you additional compensation to sign it as you leave the company, because otherwise they should not have disclosed it to you before they had you sign additional documents. So that's kind of the logic behind it. So again, it's very much sort of basic and it has to be reasonable, and yet the companies don't really act in that way. So and the reason I bring up this, you're going to give you this context, and it's just that we've seen recently, in particular, with a lot of employees, as they're leaving, the companies always present them with these thick documents of, you know, confidentiality. You're not supposed to do this, you're not supposed to do that. And employees, either, you know, because they're often kind of caught off guard when they are being terminated, they either sign or they're afraid that they have to, they just have been intimidated and they sign or they're not given a choice, they in their mind, and they sign. And then they worry what it is that it means for them. We've also seen in the context of our clients, employers sort of threatening that, well, you know, you breached our confidentiality, so we're going to take you to court or we're going to sue you. And so we've had a number of these cases come through our desks recently, and that's why I wanted to zero in on this subject. And that's why, you know, this particular case in point that we're going to discuss today is so illustrative to what it means in real terms to have a confidentiality agreement, and when that confidentiality agreement can be enforced against, you know, against the party, and in this case, against an employee, and that would hopefully serve as some sort of a roadmap for employees in particular, but also for companies as they move forward with their kind of tactics, because just to kind of give them a realistic expectation of what would happen if their dispute were to end up in court. And much of it is not rocket science, you know, it's all sort of basic and fundamental principles of legal legal principles and kind of reasonableness and fairness and common sense, and yet it's not being used very much. I think the best way to demonstrate it is just to discuss the case itself. So this is a case, as I said earlier, it's a case that's only very recent from the Dubai courts. In that case, the employer basically filed a case against the employee, against the former employee, alleging that the employee disclosed trade secrets and diverted clients and caused commercial loss. The employer sought nearly 2 million dirhams in damages for alleged disclosure of secrets and commercial harm. So it was all based on the supposed breach of this particular confidentiality agreement and allegations of loss. So at a high level, the court rejected the claim. Why? Because basically said the alleged losses were not proven, and ultimately the damages were not quantified. And so the court basically said, while generally speaking, confidentiality clauses in the UAE are enforceable, but as one of the kind of requirements of enforcement is that you need evidence. You need to have evidence and not just sort of a narrative of, yes, we've got, you know, confidential agreement that has been breached, but you need to show evidence not only of the agreement, but also, you know, how of the damage that was supposedly suffered as a result of the breach of this agreement. So let's kind of further break down what the court said and what this means for employers and employees operating in the UAE. So as I mentioned earlier, so the case went through all the way to court of first instance and all the way to the Court of Appeal and the Court of Cassation. And it was basically adjudicated just less than a year ago. It was in 2025. And so in this case, the employer filed, that's the company that filed, obviously had a kind of a personal vendetta against the employee, because it's a process. Filing a case against your employee, it's a process. It costs money. It costs emotions and time and resources. So it must have been, for one reason or another, kind of an important case for them. And so the case was filed against the sales manager, and the company sought almost $2 million dirhams in damages, plus interest and additional relief. So the employer, among other things, alleged that the employee caused significant commercial loss due to poor sales performance after he left, and then had relationships with competing companies, disclosed confidential information, diverted suppliers and clients, failed to hand over duties, and committed acts amounting to otherwise breach of trust. And so the claim included, in terms of in financial terms, compensation, basically request of compensation for losses to the tune of 1.8 million dirhams for losses for disclosure of secrets, and an additional 100,000 dirhams for alleged breach of trust, and plus some other kind of employment benefits or employment entitlements like notice compensation, housing allowance, and other related damages. So there's a whole series of claims. Yeah, I mean, in relevant terms, the court of first instance appointed an expert and ultimately awarded the company only the housing allowance compensation, which was 10,000 dirhams, because the company had paid for the employee in advance. And by the way, this is an important sort of reminder that these housing allowances, whenever they are paid by a company in advance, that as an employee, you should be prepared to offset or refund the company for the difference from the time from the last day of your employment until the rent has been paid. So that is, this is the court here kind of confirmed the company's entitlement to that remainder of the housing allowance. So, and that's just a reminder for employees, just don't take it for granted. Just because your rent has been paid in advance does not mean you're entitled to that full amount. If your employment terminates early, you need to be prepared to compensate the company for the remainder. And additionally, the court also, this is the court of first instance, also issued, added the 5% interest on the sort of the outstanding amount. And that's, by the way, that's mandated by the law. But they rejected everything else. Now, the employer, obviously, because they had very big hopes and claims for very large amounts, so they appealed. And the court of appeal, once again, rejected the appeal. And upheld the dismissal of the damages claim altogether. That's the damages for the sort of the breach of confidentiality, the trade secret, plus the additional compensation for a breach of trust. And the Court of Appeals confirmed as well that there's no proven disclosure of confidential information that was established. And so therefore, so the damages were not proven and they were rather speculative and therefore not entitled for compensation. That was further appealed. So this court of first instance, court of appeal, and then there's court of cassation. So the employer further appealed to the court of cassation. That's the highest court in Dubai. And the court of cassation, once again, upheld the lower court's reasoning. And that's the lower court's reasoning, and clarified a few standards. There was a little bit of a change to one of the employment benefits, but ultimately, in terms of the confidentiality breach and the contractual liability, the Court of Cassation went even further in their reasoning, because sometimes, in many cases, when the Court of Cassation, the highest court, affirms the lower court's decisions, it just basically says, "I affirm." We affirm the lower court's decisions without sort of further details. But in this case, the Court of Cassation actually went into the further details and discussed in the details, it's kind of laid out its reasoning why in this kind of case, the compensation for breach of confidentiality fails. So the court, among other things, stated that disclosure of company secrets constitutes a contractual liability. But liability requires proof of all three elements. So this is important. There's three elements in order to establish compensation and therefore claim for a breach of confidentiality and corresponding compensation. One is fault, then actual damage, and then the causal link between the fault and damage. And if any one of these elements is missing, then liability fails, which basically means that even if you have an employment agreement, but you cannot establish damages, then you don't really have a claim for breach of confidentiality because you have no damages. Or, for example, if you have an employment a confidentiality agreement and you even have damages, but you cannot connect the two, the breach of confidentiality agreement with the damages that you're suffering, once again, that's one of the links, one of the requirements. That if it doesn't exist, then you have no claim for breach of confidentiality. Furthermore, so the court held that the burden of proof is on the employer and the company, obviously, because here they were the ones who were filing the case. Once again, the court emphasized that the damages must be real and they must be proven. In other words, if you claim as a company that your employee breached confidentiality agreement, okay, what does that mean? To have breached a confidential agreement means so that they would have disclosed your data to somebody. But how have you suffered from it? What's the damage? So you need to be able to demonstrate the damage. Because if it's just somebody disclosed so what you believe to be is confidential information, but there's no damage, so what's the claim? So there's no, so you know, in order for the damage to, you know, for the claim to survive, there has to be sort of real and proven damage. So you cannot just presume or speculate with just because that employee has passed on your information, your valuable information to a third party, that somehow that will inevitably lead to some sort of damage. It cannot be sort of potential or hypothetical. In this particular case, the expert who issued a report kind of at the early stages found that there was no proven or quantifiable loss that was directly attributable to the employee. Therefore, once again, sort of the court confirmed that the claim for this almost 2 million dirhams was rejected because it didn't have all the three elements. So remember, there might have been a proper confidentiality agreement, and there might have even been a breach of it. In other words, the employee might have given this valuable information to a third party, but because the company was not able to demonstrate an actual damage as a result of that breach, the court held that there was basically no claim for a breach of confidentiality. So the entire cause of action fails. And the court, among other things, also confirmed reaffirmed that the trial courts have full discretion to assert expert reports. In this case, the trial court did rely on the expert reports, and they may adopt them if they're satisfied. And they're not required to address sort of every argument separately. That was one of the other elements of the claim that the Court of Cassation looked at. Because the Court of Cassation felt satisfied with the expert report and the Court of First Instance or lower court's decisions, it basically did not believe that it needed to interfere with the sort of the factual findings, as it did not see any clear legal error. So there was some other kind of a nuance with the Court of Cassation sort of changed, and that was in particular about the notice period. That sort of reversed one part of the decision from the lower courts, because the lower courts held that there was no requirement of a notice period for the employee to compensate the company for the notice period because the employee argued that they had not been paid a salary and therefore they had a right to leave without notice. And that might be so, but in order for the employee to leave without notice, they still needed to invoke certain protocols and measures, such as to report this in that particular case to Mohre, which they had not done. So the court basically held, kind of reversed, the Court of Cassation reversed one part of the case, and that is in terms of the compensation for the remainder of the notice period that the employee did not serve. But it was very minor, some like a week or two extra that they had to pay. But otherwise, it confirmed the lower court's the findings and conclusions that in order to have a cause of action for breach of confidential agreements, there always has to be a damage and there has to be a link between the breach itself and basically the damage itself, right? So the breach and the damage, that's to be a causal link. The case was obviously a lost cause for the employer, but I think it's a great case to sort of to profile and to highlight. That despite, you know, these fancy, highfalutin, legalese, scary-looking confidentiality agreements, and they're, despite the size or kind of the scale of the employer or the brand that they may carry behind them, these confidential agreements are of no effect if there's no evidence that in fact that they were, first of all, they, well, you know, they basically there was damage, but also there has to be an employment agreement to begin with, and also that employment agreement actually has to be about something confidential. A confidentiality agreement has to be something about confidential information, so that also the court kind of tackled that. So in addition to you know, for confidentiality agreements to even be valid, they also have to relate to confidential information, which is what something I said earlier. It cannot just be to cover everything. So first of all, it also has to pertain to sort of specific confidential information, and there has to be and then there has to be a breach of that confidential agreement, and then there has to be damages suffered as a result of that direct breach, and only then there will be a claim. So the final outcome here was obviously the employer failed at a somewhat a large scale confidentiality and damages claim, and succeeded only in some minor housing allowance and partial notice compensation. But ultimately, the case reinforced a clear judicial stance that allegations of disclosure and commercial harm require strict proof, and the damages must be actual and quantifiable. And then speculative business losses will not support compensation, and therefore its procedural requirements under the labor law are strictly enforced. So that was sort of that's the case itself, but kind of in simple terms, and why its application is so much broader. And that's because so often we see in our practice employees being threatened, intimidated, and kind of forced to either sign these extensive confidentiality agreements, which employees feel are all too sort of all-encompassing, too broad, sometimes just almost like suffocatingly broad. And they worry. So, you know, if we will not get paid our end of service, for example, unless we sign this new agreement, but if I sign this agreement, I won't even be able to work in my industry, because it basically precludes me from being able to even use the information that I know by virtue of what I do. And so that's what a lot of these confidentiality agreements tend to do. They try to basically encompass and almost claim property of all the knowledge that the employee may hold as a result of what they've learned during their time with the company. So just to summarize in terms of the different elements, in addition to this specific case, is in order for a cause of action for breach of confidentiality to exist, there's a whole series of sort of elements. You know, one, there has to be an agreement to begin with, right? So you cannot just, for example, because you decide to talk to me and you tell me this is covered by confidentiality, you cannot impose your confidentiality on me unless I agree. So first of all, there has to be an agreement that where parties, two or three or many parties, agree to keep their communications or that material confidential. So it's not a unilateral decision to designate something as confidential. So first, there has to be an agreement amongst the parties. Without it, you cannot impose your confidentiality restrictions on someone else. Second, the agreement itself has to, in order to withstand the scrutiny and ultimate enforcement in the courts, it has to relate to something confidential. It cannot encompass everything under the sky that would have been exchanged between in this case, for example, employee and employer, because that's not realistic. I mean, all that stuff that's been discussed and or exchanged and the employee learned in the context of their employment, it cannot possibly all be confidential. So in order to make sense, that agreement really needs to only protect and include information that's truly confidential. Third, this is kind of using some of my own experiences. Third, if it is something for an employer's standpoint or employee, whoever it is that may be entering into a contract, if it is something truly that you want, that you deem to be confidential and that's proprietary and very valuable, it's the burden is on that party to make sure that they identify these specific documents and that they designate these documents as such. Right, so you can't just basically, it's not reasonable to expect that you knew that this is important because of the type of transaction we're involved, therefore this was confidential. So the burden has to be on the party that's trying to protect its proprietary confidential information to identify and designate specifically and make sure that it has a kind of semblance of that's visible to everybody else involved, that this particular material is confidential. Then there has to be, so this agreement, it has to relate to only confidential information. It has to be very clear what that confidential information is. And then if there is a breach, there has to be demonstrable damage that would have resulted to the non-breaching party of how the breach of this confidential information, so the leakage of the confidential information would have cause damage to the company. And that damage also has to be specifically linked to that breach. It cannot just be, well, because employee left, the company started making less money because he was in sales. Now the company cannot sell as much. So therefore, look, we suffer damages. No, it has to, that particular damage, so-called damage, has to be specifically linked to the breach. And only then you will have a case for a breach of confidentiality. Otherwise, even if you have an agreement, and you go through the process through the motions, and even if your agreement is watertight and well drafted, if you're not able to demonstrate that link between the actual damage that was caused by the breach of that agreement, then you have no case. And that's the moral of the story. So confidential agreement, as scary as they may look, and as sort of as legally robust as many of them are, in many cases, they are either not enforceable or not worth pursuing in court unless you have all these elements in place. That's all for this episode of Logical with Lyudmila. If you found the episode useful and you like what we do, you can always find more on our website. That is lylawyers.com. We're also on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And for the full experience, you can watch our video podcast on YouTube. Until next time, stay informed, stay safe, and keep things logical.